On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 59A, a Brenda Starr update, and the first part of an interview with Joe G from the Beppe podcast. This and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Tab for my diet. Thank God this is diet because there's no sugar in it. Because my screen thing here would be so messed up by now with all the sugar from the tab exploding onto it. Tabalicious. Welcome to the Flatus Show. I'm Kenty. And Jose, my co-host, he's in the other room taking a nap, as usual. And welcome to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. Or you can email me. I already said the email. Yeah, call me at 206-339-JOSE. And leave me a voice comment. Just let me know. I can use it on the air, and I'll be glad to do it. There were some problems with my blog. Apparently, people couldn't leave comments on it. So, what I did, the link to the blog is another, it doesn't really make a difference where you leave the comment, whether you email me or I have no centralized location. If anybody knows how to create a forum, you know, let me know. Maybe I'll put that up. If people really, I don't think I'm going to get that many people, you know, doing that. So I think it's just easier to email me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. Let me know. I can read it, or just leave me a voice comment, or send me a voice comment. Just make yourself an MP3 and send it to me. You don't have to call. Just email me the voice comment. I'll play it. You know, that's the kind of guy I am. That's the kind of show this is. Just, you know, let me know if I can play it. You know, send it to me. I love hearing from you. Love to hear from you. I have a lot to go on here, a lot to talk about. First off is an activity for Flatus Show listeners. A few weeks back, I did a still life painting of my three tab cans and the ukulele and a butcher knife. Controversial butcher knife, I may add. And so here is what you can do, is go to the show notes, and you'll see a link to the picture. I've uploaded it to the Flatus Show pictures, right? I have a link directly to that picture. When you get there, click on see the full size or whatever it says, right? And then you download that to your computer, print it out, do whatever you want. But what I want my Flatus listeners to do is to create their own still life using that as the basis. So you can paint it, just, you know, look at the picture and paint it on something else, right? And then take a picture of it and send it to me. It can be any medium. It doesn't have to be paint. It could be a magic marker, a pen, a pencil, collage, whatever. Just do something with the three tab cans, ukulele, and butcher knife. And in fact, if you have a ukulele and butcher knife and three tab cans around your house, you can set up your own still life with those three elements and then paint something, or watercolor, or acrylic paint. I use acrylic paint. Whatever. Do something artistic with that, with those elements, and send it to me at kenty@theflatusshow.com, and I'll put it up on the my webpage and tell everybody about it. I think it'd be really cool. I was going to say, if I get a lot of these, we can pick the best one, and the person who wins will get a packet of crickets. How's that? So you can feed it to your children, or your neighbor's children, or your nieces or nephews, or whatever. Just feed it to any child you like, you know? Okay. The original three tab can, somebody suggested this to me, I should auction it off. So, I'll start the auction off at, $25. How's that? And hit my donate key with the $25, but don't do that yet until I, you know, get the highest bid. So starting at $25, I'm hoping to get $50 for it. This is for donation purposes only. I mean, you know, who knows though? Maybe it'll become a famous painting. Who knows? You never know. You know, this could be, you'll have the video. You have the video. You saw me paint it. It could be on Antiques Roadshow in 100 years. Your progeny will be like, oh, yes, my dad bought this. My great-granddad bought this from the Flater Show. And it's been sitting around. How much is it worth? It's worth millions. Okay. $50. All yours for $50 in that future possibility. Okay. Another thing is FeedBurner. My RSS feed is produced through FeedBurner. And you can subscribe to a FeedBurner, and they'll send you an email every time I put up a new show. So for those people who do not subscribe to the show through iTunes or Juice or whatever, whatever aggregator you might have, you can go to my webpage, www.theflatishow.com, and scroll to the bottom, and you'll see it says subscribe, add your email address. And that's all done through FeedBurner. So what you do is you put in your email address, patty@smith.com or whatever, and press enter, and then they'll send you an email, you confirm it, and then they'll just send you an email whenever my show is updated. I don't know if this is the third or fourth or fifth, whatever. The next item on my list is a new Frapper Map signer, Reggie McDonald from Rochester, Washington. Welcome, Reggie. I took a look at where Rochester, Washington is. I found a webpage and had a picture of a street, an empty street, saying, this is Rochester during traffic hour, or whatever. Yeah, traffic hour. Heaviest traffic time of the day, rush hour. And I laughed because there's like no cars there. So is that true, Reggie? Is your town very out of the way? I kind of like that. Okay. So today's show is full of excitement. I already talked about that in the first part. So on with the show.
Flash! That's Brenda Starry here, finishing up her scoop just for you.
Brenda Starr update. Okay. Lula and Brenda finish watching Lula's last film, Ashes of Desire. Lula tells Brenda there were rumors about Darth, but doesn't elaborate. However, Darth wanted a child, and so Lula got pregnant with Darth's baby. They did the deed. And the night the child was born, it was taken away by Darth, never to be seen again. Now, apparently they drugged her. And she was drugged for like 3 days after the birth. So she never saw her child. Jig, that's her gigolo, her young boy toy, comes in and asks Brenda to leave because he thinks Lula is tired. Lula shoos him away and says, you know, Brenda stays because she invigorates me. And so then she says to Brenda, the answer is yes, Miss Star. We are, we do, and why not? And she says, why shouldn't a rich old lady have the same perks as a rich old man? So we know that Lula, there, you know, who's in her 80s, is still getting it on, doing the horizontal dance with young Jig. So finally, Lula asks Brenda, will you find my child? And Brenda chooses to do it. So she agrees to find the child, but she asks, why not? Why not just have a private eye? And Lula says, well, I just don't want to find my child. I want it to be a bestseller. I want it to be a story. And so she knows that Brenda is a good investigator, will also make it a story because she's a journalist. And a private eye would just give you the facts and not really make it a story. And so the journalist is going to have a better eye for that. So she asks, who can I find? And Lula says, everybody's dead, so you need a Ouija board, except for Mike Mooney, who had been a child star one time, which I think is based on Mickey Rooney. So Mike Mooney is living in this old age home, and he had been Lula's boyfriend before Darth swooped in, so he said. That's what he thought, for the fresh meat. So Brenda visits mic, and they're talking. He pulls out a photo, and there are four people there, Darth and this woman, and Lula and Mike. Because Mike and Lula had been boyfriend and girlfriend before Darth swooped in. So Brenda asks Mike who the woman with Darth is, and we find out it's Betty Snopes, a B-movie actress. So she asks, were you around when the baby was born? And he was. And he had actually heard the baby cry, and it was gone, and they never saw him again. So he was there, which is odd. They had the baby at home. And so why was he there? I mean, if they had broken up, you know, kind of weird. So Brenda returns to Lula's mansion where she's living while she's doing this research. And she goes to her room, and she finds Jig playing with Patch. That's her dog. And Jig says, you know, I heard the dog whimpering, so I came in. And Brenda says, don't you ever wear pants? And because he's like wearing these shirts, he's like this tennis guy. He's real handsome. So he pins her against the wall, sort of, and it's like, you know, he has her arm there. He's real close, and he's like, he wants to know what Mike Mooney knew about Darth and Lula. And that's where we're at.
I dream of love. In dreams my heart remembers the moments divine when your love was mine. I dream of love. I keep aglow those embers, the stars that with love light shine. And all the while that I dream of love, how near, how lovely you seem, my love. Although I know you're as far as a distant star, it seems romance is only mine in fancy. So, loved one, I dream of love.
Okay. So today's interview, today's Flatus guest, let me think, how should I say this? Today's guest on the Flatus show is Joe G from the Beppe podcast. He's a Christian.
Yay.
He's a Christian gay male who has an audio blog where he reflects and complains about religion and spirituality, social issues, and pop culture 1 week at a time.
That's correct.
Welcome, Joe G.
Thank you.
So, okay, let's see here. I could start.
So why do you want me on this show?
Because you're interesting. You know, okay, let's start this way. I didn't know about your show, right? It was actually Q Potter. You know, I was complaining about Q Potter last week.
Yes.
And it's okay, you know, to complain about things. But I thought, actually, I wouldn't have known you without Q Potter because I was looking. It was at Christmas time. I had done my show where I did Christmas carols, and you had used one of the Christmas carols on your show. And I was like, what? Someone's actually using all your stuff? And so I was like, wow. So I started listening to your show from that point on.
Oh, well, that's good.
And so that's how I discovered Joe G. And I find you actually reveal yourself, you know, each week a little bit at a time. Like, I didn't know you were a born-again Christian, and that's actually what I want to find out more about, your experience in your evangelical days.
Yes.
And, you're a Quaker. This, you know, that's how you came across. And then recently you've taken off the Quaker name. So
the tag, yes.
The tag. Uh-huh. So we could talk about that, too.
Okay.
But first...
But first,
I will go through some facts, which I think I know about you. You live in L.A.
I do.
And you're from originally the Buffalo area.
Rochester, New York area.
Close enough.
That's close enough.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, Rochester. And let's see. You have a brother who's married. because there was some podcast you had, and she's a singer.
Pardon me?
She sings? She's a singer, or she does something musical?
Yes, she's a musician.
Yeah, she's a musician, because you did something on, you played some music that that she was performing. You were a Quaker for, I don't know how many years, but for the last several years, and you're attending meeting.
20
for
years.
20 years.
Yes,
I didn't realize it was that long. So,
yeah, I haven't revealed that, but it's now revealed.
Okay. Jeez Louise, that's a long time. When you do something, you do it for a little while. Okay. So, my gosh, I'm throwing off my seat here with that news. But anyway, and you've been going through, I can tell from for at least I don't know how long, at least as long as the podcast has been going. Thinking about that and trying to maybe move away from it. I don't know what the right words are, but you're going through a change, a metamorphosis.
Yes, a transition. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Now, let's see what else do I know about you. Oh, you have a gal pal, Teresa.
That's
a friend,
right.
Jill, that you went to England with.
Yes, I did. Yeah, boy, you're remembering
well, I
a
just
lot.
Listened. I just listened to your last, I don't know how many shows, from the time of your trip to England up through
God.
The most recent one, the Convergent in L.A.
I'm sure you were bored to tears. My God.
No, I'm not. You know, each show, I have discovered, you know, each show – I've listened to it weekly, okay?
Right.
And I get a little bit of information, right? But when you listen to these shows, and I've done that with my own shows, like I've gone back and listened to long stretches of them.
Right.
There's this sort of internal continuity,
right,
which you don't necessarily realize is there.
Yes.
And sort of an evolution is going on in thinking and what you see. And
right.
I think it's fascinating.
Some of that is intent. Initially, that wasn't intentional, but some of that has become more intentional. And then some of it, I don't even realize it's going on. But yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that about your podcast I noticed that when I listen to somebody's podcast several episodes in a row, I noticed that there is this kind of continuity that occurs, whether intentional or not. And that's the fun part of you know, listening to a podcast, one of the fun parts for me.
I know exactly what you're saying, and I think that's true. And I don't know if I can only say for myself that it's not. Sometimes it's not. Most of it's not intentional.
Right.
And it just sort of happens. It's just sort of. Even when I place my songs in my show, like when I do them, I really look at them outside of what I'm talking about, and sometimes they fit so perfectly. What's actually going on. It's sort of, you know, this synchronicity, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, enough of the structure of the universe and the chaos and the organization in chaos. But anyway.
Right, right.
Okay, so that's where we're at. So, okay, well, now that you told me you were a Quaker for 20 years, let's start with that. When you became a Quaker, before we do that. Now, you lived in Rochester, right? So
I grew up in Rochester.
So what happened after Rochester? Where did you live after Rochester? How'd you get to L.A.?
I moved to Albany, New York then to get my master's degree in social work. Mm-hmm. I'm a social worker by profession. Mm-hmm. And I lived there approximately 7 years. That's where I met Teresa originally, my gal pal Teresa. She's originally from Los Angeles. She moved back to Los Angeles after she had had her fill of the Northeast. I don't know if she likes me to put it that way, but that's the impression I got from her. She moved back to Los Angeles, and she suggested that I come out for a visit so that we could maintain some contact. I did. I investigated. I was thinking of going back to school to change what I did in social work from doing clinical work to teaching. And I liked the schools that were here in Los Angeles. I applied. I got accepted to one of them, and that's how I moved out to Los Angeles to get my PhD so that I could teach at the university level.
Okay. Now you did you finish that or are you still?
I'm in my last year.
Because that's why I got that impression from earlier shows.
Yes.
So how long have you been in L.A.?
I've been in Los Angeles for this month. It's been 7 years.
Wow.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. 7 years. One of the reasons why I chose California as a state was my dad was living. We've always had some family in California ever since I was a little boy. When my parents divorced when I was about, I think, 12 years old, my father moved to the Bay Area. And he lived in the Bay Area until he went back to Rochester just before he died because he wanted to be around his family when he died. And so one of the reasons why I came to California was because my dad was in the Bay Area, and I used to go up and visit him pretty regularly. So that was another draw for me to come out west from the
Northeast. You spent more time with your father during those 7 years, I guess, than previously.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That's
okay.
Yes.
Now, what was I going to say about Rochester? Well, it's out of my head now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, so you were... Okay, your parents... I know you said in an earlier episode, or maybe it was on that episode with that you had... You interviewed that woman, or she interviewed you, a Quaker woman who's becoming... Who likes Judaism now.
Oh, yes, yeah, huh? Yes, oh, yes.
Forgive me, I forget her name. We'll put it in later. I'll do that. Voot, voot, voot. Remind me and I'll explain how you can do that yourself.
All right, I will. That's great. It's wonderful.
That's right.
There are audio show notes. You're the only one who does that.
I try to make it as clear as possible, even though I sometimes sound like I'm on crack. Okay. Okay, so you were 12. I know you said it was a tough time for you. And that's sort of how you got involved with these evangelicals,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I got involved with a fundamentalist church. I really got involved with the Catholic, local Catholic church. Mm-hmm. They started a youth group, and I was about 13 or 14, and I met a kid who had been involved with this independent, small, charismatic church just outside of Rochester, New York. His name was George. And George was the first one who brought me to this charismatic fundamentalist church. And I was about 14 or 15 years old when I first got involved.
Okay. And what made you you got involved with it, right? So what made you leave the Catholic Church?
Well, I first heard about charismatic or fundamentalist Christians through Pat Robertson when all he had was a local UHF access channel in Virginia, but he had bought a small group of radio channels in the north west portion of New York State, and one of those channels was right outside of Rochester, New York. And this was back in the mid 70s. This is when Jimmy and Tammy Baker were his co-hosts. Okay, so this is how far back this goes. So I'm thinking, oh my God, this is 30 years. Over 30 years ago, I was a kid. I was listening to the radio, and I listened to Pat Robertson's 700 Club. And I had a conversion experience while listening to his radio channel. Then I kind of fell away from that, started going to the Catholic Church, and I met this kid who said, yeah, I go to a church that's like Pat Robertson's. A radio program. Why don't you go with me? And that's how I went. So I'd already had a salvation experience before I went to this church, and then I kind of recommitted myself to the Lord again, and that's how I fully got involved with the born again fundamentalist movement.
Okay. So you were raised, I guess, up through 12 as a Catholic. You went to Catholic.
Yeah, we were not what would be called nominal Catholics.
Like the Easter, Christmas Catholic.
If that. Even that. You know, you're Catholic in name and by culture and heritage.
Okay, so you were – okay, when you first heard – you had your first salvation experience with Pat Robertson's radio program.
Yes.
What was it that defined the experience for you?
Well, there was a certain prayer. There's certain things you had to acknowledge. Are you familiar with that? That you acknowledge that Jesus, you know, you're a sinner.
Yeah.
You're separated from God, and that Jesus was now your personal Lord and Savior.
Yeah.
He was the only one who could save you. Okay.
Yep.
And I prayed this prayer, and there was this kind of emotional, spiritual release that I had experienced at the time. And they even said, you may feel this kind of burden raised or lifted from your shoulders. You know, they described that as, you know, the sin being raised off of you, you know, the guilt of the sin being raised off of your shoulders or your heart or whatever. And so I did experience something like that. Now I look back and say it was a very emotional kind of spiritual experience. I don't necessarily interpret it in the way that they interpreted it or I interpreted it at the time. But I did have this kind of experience, and I thought, wow, they're right. You know, this is true. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't get connected with any of the church. A church did contact me. I forgot how they got my name or number, but they did contact me. It was a Baptist church, but I didn't want to be involved with it. You know, I was either too shy or I didn't know anybody, and I was a teenager, and I was like, oh, that's too weird to, you know, you know, right? So I started going to the local Catholic church, where my family had been nominally affiliated with, and that's how, and people really didn't have this born again experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of just fell away, you know, just by osmosis. I didn't really stick with it. And then I met this guy, like I said, through the youth group, and he was talking to me about this other church, and it was like bells going off, like, oh, that sounds like the 700 Club. And I asked him about that and if he knew about the 700 Club, and he says, yes, he did. And then that's how I got connected with a local fellowship.
So how long were you – what was the name of that fellowship, that Calvary Church or something like that?
The one that I was involved with was Christian Center.
Okay.
It was at the time it was called Brockport Christian Center, and then by the time I left, it was called Golden Heights Christian Center.
Okay. Golden
there's a whole
Heights.
Story. There's a whole story why that name changed. But anyway,
right? Did the town change its name? Is that what happened?
No, and it has nothing to do with Golden Showers. Okay. But
so, how long were you involved with that church?
I was involved for 10 years.
For 10 years.
Yes, I was involved for 10 years. I eventually joined the assistant ministry program, and I was the assistant minister for youth programming and ministry until I was demoted a few years before I left the church.
And why were you demoted?
I was demoted because one of the pastor's sons had finally come of age where he could take over the job, and so the pastor wanted his son to take over the
good
job.
Good old American nepotism.
There you go. But it was the Lord's will.
I see. Of course.
God sent his own son, so you can't get more nepotistic than that.
Yeah, that is nepotism. You know. The roots of American nepotism.
There you go.
Okay, so... She left after you were demoted. Did that disillusion you?
A few years after I was demoted, yes. Yes, it started – there were several things that disillusioned me, but that was one of them. There were other things too as well.
Now, you were attending this church through high school and college, is that right?
And college, that's correct.
And a few years after college, I suppose?
Yes, that's correct.
Did Teresa belong to this church too or –
No. I didn't know Teresa until I moved out of – this is when I was still living in Rochester, New York.
Uh-huh.
And I met Teresa in Albany, New York.
So this all happened in Rochester. That's born again, whatever. I mean, are you
– charismatic. Yeah. Pat Robertson-style Christian.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Did you at that
– Praise Jesus.
Praise Jesus. Praise Jesus. Get me my Bible.
Hallelujah.
Only one Bible bumpers will use. The American
I like Bible bumpers.
The Bible bumper. American Standard Version. I like it, actually. I like that translation.
Oh, really?
I do. It's,
have you read The Message?
I've seen it. I haven't read it, but I have looked at it. That's pretty good, too. Do you like...
Yeah, it's very – I do. I like the new – I like the New Revised Standard Version I really like that one because it's very scholarly based. It's translations, but I like the message because it kind of, you know, gives you the
It's not annotation. It's a what do they call it? Yeah, paraphrase. What do you think about the international one?
Right.
Hold on. Full name of it. I have several different Bibles because I can't say I'm religious in the denominational sense, but I do. I'm fascinated by the Bible since childhood.
You've talked about that.
Yeah, New International Version. You ever read that?
It's a good version. I tend to be a little shy of it because it's printed by I think by Zondervan, which originally that was a evangelical printing house. Although Zondervan, I think, has been acquired by a major, like, I don't know if it's Time Warner or whatever, and so I don't know how born again a Christian it was. But New International Version was originally kind of done by evangelicals to kind of counter the New Revised Standard Version, because they thought it was too biased. It was not faithful enough to a more evangelical or fundamentalist reading of the scriptures. Mm. So I tend to be a little bit hand shy of that one, of that version.
I see. Okay. I don't know it.
At least when it first came out.
Yeah. It's actually still – well, I have a Zondervan, you know, copy here.
Yes.
The bookstore, I went to the Harvard bookstore, they actually had – most of them were by Zondervan, all the different types of Bible. So they must be a different company and they just, you know, deal in Bibles. But the Zondervan.
That imprint does. The Zondervan imprint.
Okay, so where were we? So you left. So where were you after you left the church? How did you feel? Where'd you go from there?
Well, I was very disillusioned, but I was also had not completely given up my evangelical faith at that point. My position had softened somewhat. You know, I had gone from a fundamentalist to a more evangelical stance, but I was kind of on the search for different churches, and I went to a Free Methodist, and then I went to a Christian Missionary Alliance, and then very slowly I went to more mainstream churches, Presbyterian, I think Episcopalian, Methodist. Oh. I didn't make those. You're the one who's making the commentary there, so I'll let that go.
I will.
And when I was visiting, I happened to be at an Episcopal church. I was a part of at my job, we had this kind of like not for prime time players group where we went to different local community groups and did improvisational skits around mental health issues. And one of the places we went to was this Episcopal church to their singles group. And right next to the Episcopal church was the Friends meeting. And that's how I learned that Quakers were still around. I thought they had gone the way of the dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And I discovered, oh, my God, look, there's Quakers here. And I had always liked what I had read about Quakers from history books. And so I said, gee, why don't I go and, you know, get some books about Quakers and go visit. And that's how I started going to a Quaker meeting, which was about 20 years ago.
Okay, you said something about you went from fundamentalist to evangelical, right?
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes, a lot of people see them as being the same thing.
Well, the more I used to think that, but the more I've talked to different people, the more I realize it is different.
Yes.
So my question is this.
Yes.
How old is the earth? How old did you think the earth was when you went to that church, and how old do you think the earth is now?
When I was a fundamentalist Christian, I believed that the earth was about 6,000 or 7,000 years old.
And you really believed that? I mean, you were...
Well, I don't know if I believed it deep in my heart. I spoke the party line, let's put it that way.
Okay.
But that wasn't a big issue for us at that point. The church wasn't as concerned about these kind of social issues as they are now. There was some concern about it, but it was far more important to convert people to Christ. Mm-hmm. That was the way things were going to change, was that everyone would become born again, and then we would realize that science was wrong, and we would stop teaching this in school to our children. Now, I mean, that's changed during the 80s and 90s, and I was out of the movement at that point. I was in the movement when it was still somewhat hand shy around politics.
So what years was that? 75 to 85?
Yeah, 75 to 85. It was changing by the time I left the movement.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
That's when Falwell took over.
That's correct.
Pat Rupp, the Tammy Faye Baker stuff. Baker's.
Yeah, and Ronald Reagan started flirting with the evangelical and fundamentalist Christian communities. His group really started to pull them into the mainstream. And yeah. At that point, I was already leaving at that point, and I wasn't a part of that.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, at one time I did believe it because I was supposed to believe it. But having said that, you know, when I was going to evangelical churches, there were people who believed in evolution. They were quiet about it, but they believed in it. And there was more tolerance for that kind of differences of opinion. Mm. Whereas the fundamentalist church, there was no tolerance for that. Mm-hmm. If you believed in evolution, you were wrong. Okay, so...
And that's it. So you didn't believe in evolution at that time?
When I was a part of the fundamentalist church, no.
Yeah. And did you believe in evolution now?
Oh, of course I do.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I have no problems with evolution at all.
Okay.
I'm not an evangelical Christian anymore.
Okay. Well, that's fine. But, you know, you could still be an evangelical Christian and not and believe in evolution or not be a – you could be whatever and not believe in evolution. You know?
No, I understand that evolution is a theory, but what people don't understand when they make those kinds of statements is that there's a whole body of literature, scientific literature, across hundreds if not thousands of research projects now, across – probably 100 years now of research across thousands of researchers across hundreds of countries that come up with very similar findings that all point in the same direction. Mm. And to say that evolution doesn't exist is to literally ignore 100 years of this sort of literature and research that has been refined, has been contested at times, and then further refined. It's kind of like I look at fundamentalist Christians and say, do you believe that cigarette smoking causes cancer? And they say, yes, it does. So I look at them and say, then why don't you believe in evolution? Mm-hmm. And then they give me all these arguments about science, it being a theory and blah, blah, blah. And I counter and say, but that's the same kind of evidence there is for cigarette smoking tied to cancer. Mm. There's nothing that definitively ties it to cancer. It's just that there's a body of literature across several decades of literature, of research, of studies, hundreds of studies that point us in the direction that there is a link between cigarette smoking and cancer. So if you can buy that body of literature, why can't you buy the body of literature about evolution that has not only been for 4 or 5 decades, but it has been going on now for 100 years or so?
Yep.
So it's an ideology that blocks people from accepting that kind of body of literature. Mm-hmm. So
I asked that. Now let me ask you this: did you have any kind of cognitive dissonance when you started changing your point of view from fundamentalist to, let's say, you know, scientific mindedness?
Yes, I did.
And how did
mm-hmm. I did?
What did you think? What did you feel like? How long did it take you to?
To transition from fundamentalist to
transmentalist instead of transsexual.
Transmentalist.
Transsexual.
Exactly. I'm a transreligionist.
Yes, transreligionist.
A transreligionist. It took me a few years. It took about 3 or 4 years of that unraveling, but it was very liberating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't, although there was dissonance there, it was also liberating. It was very exciting to finally give up ideas that really didn't make any much sense.
What was the first idea that you threw away that you realized didn't make sense and you're not going to put your any kind of, you know, credence into it?
It was that the Bible was infallible.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe that the Bible was inspired, and I still, to this day, believe that this Bible is inspired. What I meant 25 years ago and what I meet now regarding that is somewhat different. Of course, I also believe that Bhagavad Gita is inspired well. But at that time, I shifted from it being absolutely infallible to being inspired, but sometimes getting things wrong, factually wrong.
Okay.
So that was the beginning. And then the second major thing was accepting my sexuality, and that I was, you know, even though I was in, you know, ex-gay counseling therapy, I had never been sexually active, I had never been a part of the gay community, and that had gone on for a solid 3 to 4 years, I was still a raging mad fairy and gay. Obviously, they were wrong about something. And I'd gone on a personal retreat, a silent retreat, that was, here's another thing that kind of ties in with the Quakers again. It was a retreat center that was run by a Quaker where people from all different religions could go and practice silent prayer and meditation. And I did some silent prayer and meditation, and I felt like I sensed the presence of God just like I did when I was back in the fundamentalist days. And I came to this conclusion that God still loved me, regardless of whether I was gay or not, and that there was no problem. The connection was still there. And so that also was during that period of time of my shifting my opinion and my, you know, my theology, as it was back then. So... yeah,
this is your early years as a Quaker, or is this before a Quaker?
I was not quite involved with I. What had happened was that I'd gone to this silent retreat, then, and they had some literature about Quakers. I was reading it. Then I went to this Episcopal church and found the Quaker meeting house.
Okay,
and that was all within a matter of a few months.
Okay, I understand.
Like 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm. So now you said you were part of the ex-gay movement or something.
Well, yeah. At that point, the ex-gay movement wasn't as well organized as it is today. It is far better organized and far more comprehensive in where you can find them than it was when I was in Rochester, New York. When I was going to a therapist, there were only a few therapists who were born-again Christians who were doing this kind of therapy. And Rochester, New York was just beginning to form local organizations to offer this in a very concerted effort. Most of what I had done was through personal correspondence with an organization that was in Chicago called Outpost. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I did. And then I was going to see this minister at my church who was trying to, you know, rebuke the demons from me. And, you know, he was getting this kind of literature about, you know, over-involved mother, distant father, kind of, you know, stuff. And so this was just like in the late 70s, early 80s.
You know, it's really interesting that the evangelicals refute Darwin, right? We'll latch on to Freudian ideas to support their claim.
Well, that was the interesting thing about it, Ken, was that when I was first got involved, you know, in fundamentalism, especially charismatic fundamentalism, Pentecostalism, there were older people that would, you never went to go see a therapist.
That's right.
You never went to a counselor because all of anything to do with psychoanalysis was of Satan.
Yeah, brainwashing.
And it was satanic. I don't know if you ever saw the movie about Sybil.
Oh, I did. I have that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, the mother is a fundamentalist,
right?
She's a fundamentalist.
Seventh-day Adventist, I think.
She's a Seventh-day Adventist, but she's hardcore.
She's crazy.
She's hardcore. Yeah, I mean, she's crazy and hardcore at the same time. She's probably a paranoid schizophrenic and a hardcore fundamentalist, and that's a real bad mix.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, seriously, that's a real bad mix to the point of, you know, you abuse your child, you physically abuse your child and rape your child.
The perfect storm.
The perfect storm is right. But you know, that's where those, that's the kind of sensibility I had.
Really?
So when people started saying go to a counselor, I would say, how can you say I should go to a counselor? Because I was told that was evil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I did change my opinion because I was in school. I was getting my undergraduate degree in psychology, and younger people, this is where generational stuff comes in, Ken, because younger people at that time were beginning to embrace psychology.
And
these were fundamentalists. These were fundamentalists, and they were embracing psychology. Maybe there is something to be said about this psychology, and they were kind of rejecting what the older generation was saying about that. Just kind of like a lot of younger women nowadays, or during the 80s and 90s, like Tammy Faye Baker, started wearing makeup. You weren't supposed to do that. But the younger generation started to accept that and say you could be a Christian and still
look
wear,
like a whore.
And look like a whore. And I like look like a drag queen. You know.
Okay. Okay, so okay, we're okay. Were you living with your family at this time? What did they think?
What did they think
about your involvement with this fundamentalist church?
Well, part of the reason why I got involved with fundamentalism was that I came from a fairly liberal family. My parents were divorced at this point. My dad was living out in California by that point. And my mother was pretty liberal. All of my brother and my sisters, particularly my oldest sister, were heavily into the counterculture movement. And so I come along and I'm this fundamentalist conservative Christian. Well, you could just imagine how much attention I got from this family of mine, right? You know, here they are, let's legalize pot and wear our hair long, and I'm going to the Jim and Tammy Baker Faye, you know, church a few miles away. And I'm cutting my hair and I'm wearing suits and ties. And they're like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, where did this guy come from? So you know,
was
it was a way to rebel, really. Yeah, was he adopted? But, you know, it was a way to rebel. And it was a way to distance myself and create my own sensibility.
Yeah.
And my, you know, I was a teenager. So, gee, you grow up in a liberal, you know, left-wing family.
Exactly.
Why not become conservative, you know, and be different from your family? And I did do that. I mean, in fact, I hid it from them for a while that I was going to a born-again church because I knew they were going to get on my case if it was revealed. And finally, they found out. And, you know, like good liberals, they just looked at me and said, okay.
Okay. Did they know you were – did you come out to them as gay at all during this time?
No, not at all. But they all thought I was gay. The last person to know that I was gay was me.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatusshow.com.